Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And how's everyone this evening?
Awake and ready.
Well, that's wonderful. I hope I am too. Now let us all close our eyes and fix our full attention upon the point between the eyebrows. This is your point of concentration, which we call the point of Christ consciousness. Let your whole being concentrate on that point, because Jesus said, the light of the body is the eye, therefore let thine eye be single, and thy whole body shall be filled with light. And so it shall be. Feel the light of his presence within you, outside of you, expanded in your consciousness, to move all over the city, the state, the country, the oceans that separate us from the other nations of the world, and then finally see it over this whole planet, extend it until it embraces other planets, all the stellar systems, the solar systems, until there is nothing but light everywhere. Feel your soul lifted in light, bathed in light, and feel the wondrous beauty of his everlasting presence. Now let us pray to him. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles,
free my life from all obstacles,
and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Meditation for a few moments as we listen to the spiritual music which came from God. Let us feel his vibration. It is sung to first of all, I want to announce that we will meet at Mrs. Barnhill's. This is still all right with you, isn't it? Next Friday evening. We're going to change our meeting time both there and here to 8 o'clock from now on. I'm sure all of you will make every effort to be wherever we are on time. We're going to have, we call them the jam session in the beginning, but anyway, it's a question and answer period, a teaching period. We can call them spiritual classes. But I think that they'll be very interesting, very fascinating, and much will be accomplished. You're welcome to bring anyone to these meetings at any time if you feel that they would be interested in listening to what we have to say. I would suggest also that even those who have, and especially those who have been with me for many years, should attend to these meetings. Because, as you know, you have been with me through all of my experiences, and it won't hurt to have a real refresher course. I'm going to try to make them vital and interesting for you. And all of you are the ones who will go forth and spread the word of God. So each and every one of you should have this intensifying training at this time, and I will give it to you whenever I am in town to the very best of my ability. And I will try to get some written information to you so that you'll have something to read, to study from, to work from, if and when I can. I will do the very best I can with the time I have. Now I have another announcement to make, which is not a happy one, but Gordon called me tonight and told me that his father had had a heart attack today, and he is hospitalized under oxygen, and there are other probably serious problems. And he has asked each and every one of us if we will be kind enough to pray for him. So let us hold his father in the light consciousness of God. Let us do that briefly now, and then do it this evening and every evening, seeing him as perfect in him. Perfection. We see him as well, filled with thy light, perfect in me. Let thy blessings be upon him. Read to you tonight from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men, to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor taken anything away from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been, and God requireth that which is past. And that is all of life, isn't it? It is this whole world of duality and everything that is in it. I want to tell you a story tonight. The title of the story is June the Fatherless. It's about a little girl whose name is June, and she was a beautiful little thing with big blue eyes and a sweet flower-like face. She was a very good girl, very shy, but very friendly to all people. She tried to make friends with them, but they wouldn't make friends with her. They held themselves apart, it seemed to so. Now one reason was perhaps because June's mother took in washing. And that was really not a very high position to hold in the scheme of man. But nevertheless, it was an honorable work and highly thought of by God. The women were even heard to remark that there's no putting down the caste system And June came to know that perhaps she was a little different than everybody else. So she went to her mother and she said to her, "Mother, am I different?" And her mother, looking down at her beautiful little face, said, "Yes, my child, you are different. And yet we are all the same." So June kept on trying to make friends with people without avail. One day, the children of school even stoned her. And although she tried to be brave and not to cry, it hurt a very great deal. And she didn't know what to do. She didn't want to tell her mother about it to hurt her more than she already felt that she had been hurt in life. So she said to her mother that same evening, "Mother, were you ever stoned?" She said, "No, my child, but let me read you a story about one who was." So she took out the holy book and read the story of the woman taken in adultery and of the great and beautiful master who came and lifted all of those who accused her and said that he who hath not sinned cast the first stone. And when he looked up, there was none of her accusers left. So she said to her mother, thinking of the story, "Mother, were you never married?" She felt the mother's arms close around her a little tighter than they ever had before, because you see, another difficulty was that June didn't have a father. Then the mother hugged the child a little bit tighter, and she said, "My child, we all have a father. He is a heavenly father who looks out after each and every one of us." Well, June went about her business. 2 or 3 years passed, and she grew more beautiful, more lovely, more silent sometimes, because all she had to talk to was her mother, her teacher. She went to Sunday school. She met no better treatment there. One day she listened to some of the children talking, and they said that their mothers had said that there was a man from a faraway country coming. The strange thing about him was that he wore a very unusual and different kind of dress. And he was supposed to be a heathen. But they felt that they would like to have him and at least listen to him talk, because his subject was rather an interesting one. It was on literature, comparative literature. So she thought that this would be very interesting to hear. And then she heard some of the mothers talking. And they were laughing. They said that it was really quite a boon to be able to have him, because everybody was talking about him. And he was said to be the lion of the hour. The only difficulty was that June couldn't go, because it said that each person had to pay a piece of silver, and the silver was to be used in purchasing a punch bowl for the women's club. She didn't have any silver. So she was walking along the street thinking about this, and all of a sudden she saw this picture of the man who was going to speak. And as she looked at him, her whole being was filled with joy, because the face which was on the poster was very, very beautiful and Christ-like in appearance. And the eyes that looked out from the picture were large, and they looked full of the light of God, even in the picture. But she saw a bit of mud splashed on it, and she felt sorry that this should be. So anyway, the next day came. It was time for the man to come to speak to the members of the club. June thought that the least she could do would be to stand outside and perhaps see him as he passed by. Which she did, and as he passed, the children rose up from behind the hedge where they were all hiding, and they threw stones at him too. And then they all ran away. But June stood her ground, and she came out and she said, "Are you hurt?" She said, "I feel very sorry, because you see, they have stoned me too, and I know how much it hurts." And he, with the most beautiful smile on his face, took her face in his hands And he said, "What is your name, my child?" And she said, "June." She said, "I wanted very much to come and hear you because I feel like I have known you always." She said, "I have told you my name and I have seen your name on the poster, but I can't pronounce it." So syllable by syllable, he pronounced the name, which forevermore was to mean master to her. I want to talk to you tonight about guru discipleship. I think it's a good subject to speak of tonight before we start our classes. In the chapter that I read to you, it says that for every time there is a season. And so it is that there comes into the life of every individual soul, whether it be in one incarnation or another, a time for guru discipleship relationship. It is a very, very special thing. It is very different than the average teacher-student relationship. There are many sincere individuals who go to theological schools and who get degrees of doctors of divinity, but they themselves have gotten most of what they have out of books and from the mouths of their teachers, and they themselves have not yet had the realization of God within themselves. This is not to say that they will not if they pursue the path which they have started out on. In the beginning, there are many teachers when the soul wakes to spiritual consciousness, the need that they want God with all of their hearts and minds and souls and strength. And they are willing to pay any price for it. It depends on the degree of desire as to what the results will be. Many times they have many teachers in the beginning, but when the time comes when they are utterly sincere in wishing to surrender themselves and everything they have at the feet of the Lord, that it is at that time that he comes in human form. It is that one who has himself or herself been tested in the fire of suffering, who has gone through the mystical crucifixion within himself or herself, and has risen above all of these things with the complete awareness of his knowledge of his oneness with God. There is a tremendous difference. You can describe sulfuric acid in a bottle, for instance. But yet, this does not give you the knowledge of what sulfuric acid means, what it feels like. You can see the label on the body, on the bottle, but that is only descriptive of what is inside. You can read about it in a book, but that still does not give you the definite knowledge of what that contains. And so it is with a true spiritual teacher. You must have a guru, one who comes to take you out of the darkness into the light of the Spirit of God in order that you may advance. Recently, someone told me that they had been talking with an individual who was reading the commentaries of four Bhagavad Gitas at one time, going from one to the other, and every time they would move, they would take them from one chair to the other along with them. And there had been other translations of the Hindu scriptures which had been given, and so these scriptures were telling different states of realization. This individual was trying to be their own guru and to determine the state of their own spiritual realization. This is literally impossible to do, because you see, your mind will accept any thought that you wish to put into it. And so many times it's the blind leading the blind. You cannot possibly evaluate yourself and your own spiritual development because you're using your own mind to evaluate your own mind, and it plays tricks on you. It's just impossible to do. But the guru, that one who has realized God within himself, comes and has the ability at once to know where you are. It is said that only God knows the state of each of us. And so, in truth, it is. But if it is His will, He leads this soul to the feet of the true guru. And He tells that one whatever is necessary for him to know in order that he may lead that one to the consciousness of his oneness with the divine. It's a tremendous experience, but it also requires much. I wrote to a devotee once some time ago. I'm going to read you a little excerpt from it. It is my constant prayer that you may come not only to know, but to understand and fully realize that every thought, word, and action which I have expressed with regard to you since the night you knelt at my feet and asked me to accept you as my disciple has been solely and completely God-directed, and for the single purpose of giving you what you said you wanted at any cost, even that of blood and sweat and tears, the knowledge of your oneness with Him. There can be no withholding of self, not even a shred, if the goal is to be reached. True love is all giving and all forgiving, and I must have all of it if you are to realize your dream. It is said that God and Guru are not different. Therefore, it is the disciple who must meet the tests, however great, given so that he may recognize the human ego for what it is, and through God's grace, which gives him the power of overcoming, transcend it and transform it into the divine. It is not the guru who is on trial, because the true guru who has become God in human form has already passed through the fire of testing and has paid the supreme price for knowing the truth in order that he may become the wielder of the law and not its victim. In order to be a true disciple, there must be no thought of self. There can be no life of one's own. All that you are and all that you call your own must be surrendered on the altar of your love for the Lord. Before the flower of God realization can unfold and pour forth its fragrance upon the earth, it requires as its nourishment and sustenance the feeling and expression of perfect love, unquestioning faith, unqualified obedience, complete dedication, and total commitment. Few indeed are those who can meet this test. The one who does, and each one can if his desire is great enough, finds that having given all, withholding nothing for himself, he has lost nothing. He now has everything more perfectly, more beautifully, more bountifully, more gloriously than ever before. It is through such as these God smiles and radiates His light, revealing His wondrous presence to those who have eyes to see and those who have eyes to hear. Speaking to you just from my own heart, I want you to know this. Nothing is ever accomplished in a day, especially God realization. Everyone feels that he has failed at some time or other. The Bible verifies this when it speaks of Jesus carrying his cross, which is to say his body, on the path of Golgotha, the hill of the skull, where God is to be realized. It states simply, Jesus fell. Certainly I did not reach my present state overnight, and I fell many times on the way. But my love for God and for my guru was greater than my love for myself. And the day came through God's infinite love and mercy, when I could finally give myself to Him, the infinite beloved, in full measure. I would say that to each and every one of you. I don't ask you to give yourself to me, but to God. And this is the purpose for which every guru comes. It is not to draw people to himself personally, but to draw them to the infinite whom they say they want. But as we've said many times before, people give us a lot of lip service. They say they want God, and truly they don't. They said they will give him everything, even sweat If it entails sweat and blood and tears, yet do they mean it? If the final test comes, would you be willing, as the master that you profess to follow, Jesus the Christ, would you be willing to lay down your life for him? Ask yourselves this question. Feel the pulse of your spirituality. Ask yourself if you are completely dedicated, if you are sincere, if you are serious about wanting God. If you are, then these the things that I have read you are the requirements. Why does a guru ask this of a disciple? Because unless they have the undivided love, undivided attention, undivided obedience, loyalty, devotion, all that goes with it, they cannot do the work for God nor for God in that one. There must be total dedication. There must be a willingness to serve under all conditions, any conditions. Now there are many of you, most of you, who serve God and Guru faithfully at all times. But I want you to know that it is not only in this form that you must serve him, but in every form which comes before you in which he dwells. And he dwells in the forms of all. I want, when I am not with you, to know that you are loving God and serving him in all that you meet, no matter whether I'm here or anywhere. I once had a personal experience. My master was always very close to me and very wonderful to me. He never scolded me once in all of my life. I don't know how I avoided it. Because, believe me, I was no saint. But anyway, this was the way it was. He just seemed to have such tremendous understanding, and I always felt so wonderfully, beautifully close to him. And I wrote once after I was paralyzed and asked if I might come and see him. And there was somebody at the organization where he presided as the head, who sent me a telegram and said, there is no room for you, don't come. It was just like a slap in the face because I'd been with him for many years. And somehow, inside of myself, I knew that he had never seen my request. And I knew just as surely as anything that I would see him. So I sat down and I wrote him a letter personally. And he was out of town and it was forwarded to him. So I started out on faith. And I left with a girlfriend of mine. I had been paralyzed and I needed to be with him to get my equilibrium. Incidentally, he saved my life through the power of God within him at this time. I owe him so much. I owe him my life, and so I gave it to him in return to use in whatever way that he wanted to use it. And he took me at my word, and he has used it greatly, I can assure you. But in any case, I said to this girl as we drove down, there will be a letter in Long Beach from my master telling me that he will see me. And she just laughed at me. She was an unbeliever. And I knew that it was going to be there. And sure enough, when I got down there, Barbara had forwarded me a letter which came to Seattle. And she forwarded airmail, and there was my letter from master telling me I could see him. So when I went to him, I fell at his feet. Oh, what light there was. I wish you all could have known him as I know him. How tremendous he was. Just filled with the light and the love of God. I have seen the light around him so great that it just extended and it extended as far as the eye could see. I have seen him stand before a large audience and his whole body disappeared in light, or there was just a dark outline. And I would blink my eyes this way and that way, and still I would see him just that way. He was filled with light, and the power of God in him was so tremendous that it is through his grace that I am here. So I knelt before him trying to thank him for saving my life. He looked at me very sweetly and lifted me up, and he said, Mildred, God is so wonderful. It is he whom we must thank. And he was always like this, always like this. So later on, I was talking to him, and I told him about the telegram I had received. So he took this person from where she was, and he brought her up right under his eye,
Mount Washington so he could look at it. I said, why do you do that? She likes to be at this other place. He said, I do this because she must learn that she must serve God in everyone as she serves God in me. I never forgot that. Because our life should be one constant service to God, one constant thought of God in everything that we do. Can we go to school? Can we work? Can we enjoy our loved ones? Can we play or laugh or read or do any God-blessed thing if it were not for God, our Father? So it is high time that we gave him a place in our lives and put him first above all other things. You won't take anything away from yourself except the things that you should be getting rid of. Rather, your life will become so fulfilled, so fascinating, so interesting, not always easy. Believe me, not always easy. But it will be a challenge. When the day comes when the Father touches you on the shoulder and says, come, my child, it's time for you to come home, you can say, I have lived. I know I can say that. I know no one who has had a fuller life than I have, who is more active every moment, who has more enjoyment, more friends, more love, more enemies, more hate, more everything than I do. And just like it says in this Bible chapter, it tells about wars, it tells about hatred, and that there's a time for everything, because this is all a part of duality, don't you see? The guru comes, as I said, not to take you to himself, not to have personal adoration. This is not the thing. You don't worship the personal in the guru. You enjoy it. If it's magnetic, if it's fascinating, if it has a lot of different things, or whatever happens to appeal to your nature. But it is God in that one that you worship. It is God in that one who comes to take you out of the darkness into the light of his eternal and everlasting presence. Everybody looks at the guru and thinks what a wonderful thing it would be to be a guru, you know. Everybody bowing before you, all these people coming around, many of them giving you things, doing things for you. Oh, I should say so. But then there's the other part of it, where all the burdens are cast upon the shoulders of the guru. Everybody, or not everybody, but many disagree with what they say, with what they wear, how they look, how they live, what they do, this and that and the other thing. And you're constantly on the head of a pin. And you're up there all by yourself, just you and God and nobody else. And you see, there isn't anybody up there on that level that you can get buddy-buddy with like all of you can. And hash mother over, for instance, and say, mother said this, mother said that, mother didn't do this, and mother didn't do the other thing, you know? That one is all alone with God. And it's a pretty lonely existence sometimes, and you're terribly lonely even in the midst of the crowd. Now you say, now how can that be? Here, this one is God realized, has reached the ultimate, has the bliss of God no doubt within her. He has all of these other things. She certainly is above the feeling of loneliness. Not mother. She shouldn't be lonely. Doesn't she have God? Well, now let me ask you. If you were all alone with just God at this point, do you think you'd be completely happy and fulfilled and all the rest of it without any human companionship, anybody that was at your level where you could laugh and play and have fun with them and tell them your problems? Because you're not supposed to have any if you're a guru, don't forget. A guru should never have any problems, not ever. You can bring all the problems and dump them on the shoulders of the guru. You see, and the guru absorbs them, gives you words of wisdom, gives you lots of love. But if that one should happen to spank you a little, oh my, that's terrible, isn't it? And it hurts sometimes. But don't forget that the guru is completely surrendered to the will of God. And whatever God says, thinks, does through that one is his will for the one who stands before the guru. because the guru is a mirror of whatever is within each and every one of us, and they react accordingly. I was reading an article not long ago about Anandamayi Ma, the greatest woman saint in India today, and her disciples many times quarrel, and one will say, well, Ma says this. The other one says, no, that isn't what she teaches. She told me this. And somebody comes along and says, no, you're both wrong. Now, we were discussing this subject, and this is what she told me. This is really what she teaches. And they weren't realizing that she had said exactly what she had said and what they thought she had said to each and every one of them, because that was what they needed. Now, sometimes the guru's statements contradict each other. And this apparently confuses the disciple. But then if they didn't hobnob together and gossip so much about these things, they wouldn't know about that, would they? And you know, it's a very interesting thing how many things have come back to me many times when some of the group have been together. And I am quoted as having said this and that and the other thing. And I kind of shake my head and look at them in utter amazement. And I think, I did? Well, now, isn't that interesting? And by the time it's come back to me, what I did say has no faintest resemblance of what I said in the beginning. And it has grown and grown and grown and grown like a tremendous big snowball. So what has been accomplished? Oh, it's a great life, this business of being a guru. And let me set your mind at rest. If I didn't have God as my constant companion and my comforter, as my guide and director in everything that I do, if I didn't feel the bliss of His presence, if I didn't have the specific knowledge that it was His strength, His will, His mind, His wisdom, His power guiding and directing me in all that comes before me, I couldn't stand it. He is with me every moment. But you know, everyone, even the guru, the greatest masters who ever lives, including Krishna, Buddha, the Christ, Zoroaster, anyone you want to mention, are both human and divine. And there are times when the human must come into evidence. If it weren't, I couldn't stand before you. If you were to see only the divine within me, for instance, God bless me that I should be so pure. You know? Anyway, if you should see this, your eyes could not stand it. If I were to function at the high level of the superconscious, of the states that I have at times experienced tremendously, you would have no faintest rapport with me. You couldn't bear to open your eyes and look at me. Remember, this is spoken about in the Bible, even about those disciples who saw the Christ and couldn't bear to look at him because of the great light. It is blinding. You would not find the humanness in me that you as individuals need in order that we may live all of the things that it says in this chapter and still go to God. The guru, if they are to be effective, if he is to be effective or she, must keep the common touch. I think that that's why so much guruism has developed in India, because the guru is worshipped only in the divine, and in most cases he does not permit the disciple to see the human part of it. Now sometimes this is good, because if you do permit the disciple in the beginning to see too much of the humanness which is in each and every one of us, they lose this aura, this awe, this reverence that they have. And they should never do this, no matter what. I let all of you laugh and play and dream, and we have fun together. But when the time comes for being serious, we do it like that. And you know, those of you who have been with me for a long time, that we have gone to the heights, and yet we've had a lot of fun because God is our playmate. And this is the way life should be. There is only one religion, and that's man's need to avoid suffering and want and to attain peace and happiness. And he will never attain that state of peace and happiness until he finds his oneness with his source, the infinite beloved who dwells within himself and within every atom of space. We are like sparks that shoot forth from the fire of God. But the spark by itself doesn't last for long. It is only when it is absorbed by the flame, when that heat is there to furnish whatever is necessary to keep them warm, are they what they should be. And so it is between the guru and the disciple. There is a story told in India also about a magician once who used to do all sorts of tricks. And he found a very personable young boy whom he wanted to train to help him. So he took this boy under his wing and he trained him for months. And the boy became very proficient, and he could go up on the highest bars, and he could do somersaults, and he could walk a tightrope, and he could stand up a stick. And oh, his feats were so marvelous that pretty soon everybody was acclaiming him. And it went to his head, and he thought, how wonderful am I? After all, I'm even greater than my master because he stands down there while I'm up here doing all these tricks. So he thought to himself, I don't need him anymore, and he got rid of him. No, that wasn't the way the story went. Excuse me. I'll back up here. He didn't get rid of him. The master, the man who trained him, this was it so little time since I've read this, the man who trained him realized that all of this flattery had gone to his head, and one day, when he was up there performing, the master removed the stick from underneath him and he fell to the ground with a thump. That's much better. And all of a sudden that he realized that not having the master to hold the pole, to keep him up in the air, so he could do all of these tricks and be so great, that he of himself was nothing. And so it is. I told you before, I don't believe in guruism. We do not have a church. We do not have an organization. I do not demand of you that you leave the life which you are living now, nor the church which you want to go to. You have complete freedom at all times. But you know that's a very clever piece of strategism, because the greatest way to hold anybody is to give them their utter freedom. It's just true. You give them what they want, as Sai Baba said, until they want what you want to give them. The true guru wants nothing from the disciple for himself. Everything that he says, thinks, and does is to take that one to God, which the disciple says he or she wants to do. And again, it comes down to a question of individual attitudes, individual determination, and individual willingness to obey willingly. And that word willingly is big. Every request, every order of the guru, and but fast. It's good training, it's good discipline. And the purpose for this is to train you that everything that you do may be done with full concentration, with obedience. But the guru teaches you that while you're doing these things, first and foremost and above all, your mind should be on God. Knowing that you of yourself do nothing, that is your Father who doeth the works, that he does everything through you. If your own attitude is what it should be, then the results are bound to be what they should be and what you would want them to be. But if you are in trouble, the trouble lies within your own consciousness, your own attitudes, what you as an individual put forth to the world in thought, word, and speech. For everything there's a season. And the seeds that you plant, whatever they may be, you will harvest. And nothing happens just by happenstance.
There are laws which govern this universe. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. And if the harvest which you reap is not a good one, then look within yourself, because at some time or another you have done or said or thought whatever was necessary to bring your present state into its manifestation. You can blame no one, no condition, no country, no individual, no circumstance for anything. No one but yourself. And so if you cannot see this, then you'd better take a good look within. And if you can't see it yourself, then go to somebody who can help you. And the guru is there for that purpose. Now, I've had many people who have come to me who have needed psychiatric help. I'm not a psychiatrist. My field is the field of the spirit. And much has been done in the way of psychiatry through this form, and is through many of the forms which God makes to serve people. But if a person is in trouble, they should go for help. And then when they are as they should be, then come to the spiritual teacher. Because as long as there is disorder within yourself that is of the kind that needs that type of help should be sought. And eagerly. It's very difficult many times to realize that we need this kind of help, but many of us do. The guru many times can do it. A good doctor many times can do it. But whatever you need, take a good look at yourselves and then go after it in every sense of the word. We teach balance. We teach that God is life and life is God. Life is to be enjoyed. It is our Father's good pleasure to give us all of the good things of his kingdom, both of heaven and of earth. But what we get depends on what we are, what we give to others, and what we do in every department of life. Now, because we're starting these classes, I don't want anybody to feel at any time that they do not have their freedom. You are free to come and to go as you please. It is your decision to make as to whether or not you come to a class. It is your decision to make as to whether this is more important or that is more important. But don't forget that I tell you that God is the most important date, your date with him, that you will ever have and ever keep. And I would suggest that you not break it. As I say, you have your freedom. Whether you come or not, harms me not in the least. It will only take from you. Now, there are extenuating circumstances, and I will not blame anyone because it is not up to me to judge. Judge not, lest ye be judged, it says here. I want everybody to have a free and wonderful companionship in God, to feel free to work in the way that God directs them. I don't want to make you my slaves. I want to make you masters of yourselves. And I can't do that if you do not cooperate, if you do not give me all the things that I said to this disciple in that letter. Now, when I say all of it, I don't mean to exclude everybody else in the universe. Your husbands, your wives, your mothers, your fathers, your children, your friends, your sweethearts, your lovers, your business associates. I don't mean that at all. When I'm asking for this type of thing, I'm asking for your undivided love, loyalty, devotion, and surrender to God himself, in order that he, within this form, can help you to become the highest and the best of which you are capable. In any way that I can, I will help you. I'm only one person. Sometimes I think maybe God should divide me, and then I think, God forbid. You know? I don't know how God and I would make it. But you've heard me tell many times about Ramdas. After his trip around the world, he said that chap God
must have been so tired that he was just sleeping and sleeping and sleeping. He said, the poor chap, he was just all tired out after having to take Ram Dass all over the world. He had to make all of his arrangements for traveling. He had to provide the money. He had to arrange for the hotels. He had to arrange for the places for his lectures. He had to arrange for the people to come, for the transportation. He said he just didn't get any sleep at all, and he said he's worn out so much that he's still sleeping. And you see, this we think is a fantastic idea, but who is God? And what is he? You see, God is our very self. There's nothing but God. And so God, like us, because he and I and all of us are not different. I was going to say he and I, which is true, but it's also true of he and you, are not different. And so we work, we play, we travel, we do all of these things, and then we sleep because we're all tired out. Huh? And so this is the way God is, don't you see? It's that simple. I'm trying to get you to understand that God is within you now. Like I've told you, just like the idea of separation from God hinges on one thought, so also is union with him, oneness with him. And all you have to do is to reach out for that thought. Keep reaching. Father, reveal thyself, reveal thyself. Remove this veil of ignorance which stands between me and thee, and let me see thy shining face, thy beautiful face. And if you keep pounding on that door long enough, and if you cry to him within the sanctity of your own soul, with everything you've got, he must obey you, because there is one thing he cannot resist, and that is your love. Give him your painful measure, all of it, every little bit, holding nothing back for yourself, as I said in this letter. When you enter into the guru-disciple relationship, never mind what you think, want, or anything else. You are asking the guru to take you to God, aren't you? So forget yourself and your own petty hurts and whims and desires and all of these things that come within you to tempt you away from the path. And you will find a tremendous change, and you will find, as I said to this disciple, that you have not lost anything, but rather, having given up everything, you have gained a far greater reward. My greatest joy is to see the development of God realization in those who come before me. The greatest gift you can give me is your love for him, your dedication to him, your service to him. Willingly offer him your brain, your body, your hands, your feet, your eyes, everything you have in service to him. What greater reward can there be? And you see, if you will do this first, as it says, seek ye first God and his kingdom, then all of these other things shall be added unto you, and you will have your heart's desire. Because all that you desire is contained within the heart of God. So if you are one with him, then all that you desire shall be yours. This does not preclude anything. I don't believe in a narrow concept that you have to go into a cave, you have to go to a mountain in order to find God, that you have to leave all of your dear ones. I don't believe this at all. Because your heart is the cave where you may go within and worship him. And this up here is the mountain, the Himalaya, of your own being, where you can go up into that mountain and commune with him. Remember, I think I've told you before, the poem that I wrote for my son many years ago. In my heart is a constant prayer for you that murmurs like a haunting refrain. It is filled with love and a knowledge true that God's wisdom you will gain. I see in the mirror of my mind the reflection of your soul. I see its exquisite beauty and its color of purest gold. I see God standing close to you, holding out his hand, just waiting for you to tell him you are his but to command. Enter into your temple. Seal it very tight. Forget the things of time and space. Be one with his infinite light. You are all my children, each and every one of you. Because you see, God's children are my children. My children are God's children. We are all one in him. And I love each and every one of you with all my heart. There is nothing that I would not do for you that he directs me to do. I am yours to serve you in every way that I can. And I want you to know this. But I want you to know the true meaning of the scriptures. I want you to know the true meaning of life. And I want you to be able to choose all that is good out of it. Only the best. Because every mother wants for her child all of the wonderful, the beautiful, the wise, and the good. You're the future and the present citizens of the world. And from you will come others. And as you learn and go into your own married lives, some of you who are not married, raise children of your own, whom God has given you to take to himself. You too will want them to be good. You will want only the best for them. This is my feeling to you, both human and divine. In closing, I'll tell you, I told you about bright eyes the other day. And this individual saw bright eyes again, and bright eyes said that they, jointly, the medium and the entity which inhabited her body, had enjoyed my visit very much, and although they were going on a sabbatical until September, if I came to town again, to be sure and come and see them. Now, isn't that lovely? All close our eyes and pray to the Lord. Our Father which art in heaven,
our Father which art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name,
hallowed be thy name,
thy kingdom come,
thy kingdom come,
thy will be done,
thy will be done,
in earth as it is in heaven,
in earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread,
give us this day our daily bread,
and forgive us our transgressions. As we forgive those who have transgressed against us. And lead us not into temptation. But deliver us from all evil. For thine is the kingdom. And the power. And the glory. Forever.
O Heavenly Father,
open my eyes that I may see thy face. Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere. Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love. May thy love shine forever. Upon the sanctuary of my devotion. May I be able to awaken all hearts with my own.
And bring them to thee.